This is a dispatch from the Institute of Magical Historicity. These dispatches come in from across our worldwide network in New York, Zurich, Rochester, Prague, and San Francisco. They are written and read by Institute President Benjamin Wax and scored by the Dean of Aesthetics, Ariel Cruz. They have been peer-reviewed for accuracy by the Council of Three and fact-checked by Institute staff. For more information, visit magicalhistoricity.com. Encore. She dropped out of her classical music program and abandoned her scholarship to travel to Europe and be an au pair, because seeing the world seemed like a better life than spending long days in practice rooms the size of a closet. But she missed the instrument, the feel of its reed on her lips, the sound she made with her breath and hands, and the experience of making music with others. So she auditioned for the local orchestra in a small Swiss town and was accepted. In rehearsals, she met a British man with tattoos on his arms who had fled a life at the London Stock Exchange. He played the French horn, and they fell in love. She lived with the children she tended to by day and went to his small cottage at night, and they practiced, each playing their incomplete parts of a much larger composition to the beat of a metronome. When they rehearsed with the orchestra, they were as precise as a mechanical watch, every note in its exact place. Sometimes she thought the audiences clapped more for the perfection of the recitation than they did the beauty of the music. She tried to tell her lover this, but he did not understand because the two were the same. The more she thought about this, the more it seemed that the cottage was barely larger than a closet, even though he might be right. She began to daydream during rehearsals, and once, during a daydream, she played an entirely different melody into the symphony. She did not know where it had come from, and her fellow musicians laughed as the conductor shouted, but she thought it had been beautiful. She never played that melody again, but she kept it in her head as she showered in the morning, and she hummed it to the little children she cared for. And she walked to its rhythm as she and her lover visited a traveling circus from the Czech Republic. The circus had been managed by the same family of performers for seven generations, even at the risk of their lives under communism, which had forbidden them from traveling their traditional routes. And when she saw that the circus had a small orchestra, which played music to accompany the mimes and the acrobats, she ran up to the ringmaster and asked him if they would take an oboe player with them. He was skeptical because they'd never had an oboe before, and it would mean another mouth to feed and hand to pay. But she placed her hands on his shoulders and said that a classically trained musician could offer every emotion ever experienced in the last 2,000 years to their clowns and their puppeteers. The ringmaster had seen the look on her face before, worn by his sister-in-law, who had run away from the city of Budapest to ride elephants and marry his brother. And he told her to get her instrument and be on sight at the stroke of midnight. She ran back to her lover's cottage, and he ran by her side asking why she had gone mad. She could not possibly leave him, or the orchestra, or the children she cared for, or the life she had built. She reminded him that she had run away once to be here, just as he had. "You could do it again," she said. "We could find a whole new kind of music together." "It will be so much less than what we have," he told her. "I know I'm not Mozart, but this way he moves through me." And when he tried to bar her from leaving through the door, she leapt out the window and ran as swiftly as she could back to the circus, the sound of his footsteps behind her. He watched her step on board a truck filled with magicians and contortionists, and stood under a street lamp as the truck pulled away. Years later, he still plays renditions of the greatest and most intricate music in the history of the world, without a note out of place, in a small village concert hall on the same nights that she improvises wildly with a small group of musicians. A trombone, a violin, a tuba, a banjo, a guitar, whatever talent they can find to fill the present moment. Though they have never spoken again, they think of each other often, especially in the moment of silence, just before the applause. This has been a dispatch from the Institute of Magical Historicity. The Institute is headquartered in San Francisco with major offices in New York, Zurich, Rochester, and Prague. Dispatches are released twice a month on iTunes, SoundCloud, and other services, with additional dispatches provided exclusively to Institute members. Dispatches cannot be taken for credit, but can serve as course prerequisites. The Institute is a signatory to the Johannesburg Protocols and is in no way affiliated with Benjamin Winter or his estate. For more information, including a selection of workshops, books, artifacts, and certifications in magical historicity, visit magicalhistoricity.com. You can support the Institute or become a member on Patreon at patreon.com/magicalhistoricity.